Welcome to the Southern Ground Podcast, provided by Alabama Extension through Auburn University. Extension educators Shane Harris and Dr. Chip East discuss seasonal lawn and garden topics, address common questions, and provide the practical solutions you want to know. Let's dig into our Southern Ground.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Southern Ground. I'm Shane Harris, and joining me is Dr. Chip East. Good morning, Chip.
Morning, Shane.
And we have a very special guest. We have Dr. Dave Hahn, who is with Auburn University, and he's with our Alabama Cooperative Extension System, and he serves as our extension specialist for turf grass. And we call him all the time when we have issues with home lawns, problems in the grass, or even how to establish the grass. So welcome, Dr. Hahn.
Oh, thanks, Shane. Thanks, Chip. I'm really happy to be here this morning.
Well, this is definitely your line of work and your specialty. So Chip and I, as we looked at these topics for the spring and early summer, now that it's warm here in the deep south, everybody's getting that lawn ready for that grass to grow and turn perfectly green, looking for that perfect lawn. And one hot topic is always how to establish the grass, establish a lawn, or sometimes even to a point of doing some maintenance and renovating a lawn. So today's topic is actually selecting turf grass for the home lawn.
All right, let's get started.
So I guess, Chip, my thoughts is, how do we approach looking at a grass? If we have a brand new home, maybe something that's being built, or if you do want to do a renovation, Dr. Hahn and Chip, where do we start when it comes to deciding what would be the perfect turf grass for my situation?
I always ask people what they're wanting to get out of the turf. And if you got a lot of young kids that's going to be playing in it, that's one thing. If you never walk on it, I know people that never go outside in their yard, so I don't know what it matters. There are certain grass that might recover better than another. And then what you want it to look like in the wintertime, summertime, how good you want it to look. And I think it's important to look at that before you plant. A lot of times people already got something and they really wanted something else. And I'm like, well, you chose to do this. And
that's a good point, because that's choosing any kind of plant around the home. What's the grass going to be used for? Both of y'all do a lot with athletic turf. And that's when we start looking at the right grass for those athletic fields that's tough and can tolerate all that foot traffic. But a lot of people just want a green grass. They just want a green yard. They just want it to look pretty. A lot of times they want it to look like a beautiful golf course that's manicured and well-maintained.
My favorite one, Dr. Dave, for the athletic turf may not be my favorite one for the home lawn. So tell us about some of the warm season turf grasses that are commonly grown in Alabama. What's the most common?
Well, first of all, I have to say that if you have the chance to pick what kind of grass you have in your lawn, you are already way ahead of the game. Most people, if they buy a house, it comes with a landscape. And usually that includes the lawn. And so when you go to renovate a lawn, or if you are building a new house and are involved in the process early enough that you can have some input into the grass, that's great. That's way ahead of where most people are. Choosing a grass that's going to work, the major thing besides how are you going to use the lawn is just what is the environment like. And that encompasses two major things. Number one is just where are you located in terms of what's the climate? How hot does it get in the summer? How cold does it get in the wintertime? You know, the South actually has a wide variety of different climates. And we have six or seven, maybe. We'll probably talk about four or five of them today, but six or seven different species of grass that would work in a lawn depending on exactly where in the South you are. But the other major thing is shade. And this is something which I think creeps up on people quite literally, you know, as trees grow, as shrubs get bigger. Grasses, as a group of plants, they don't do well in the shade. And this is just how they are. When you go out walking in the woods, you never really see a nice lush stand of grass out there in the forest understory, right? Forest floor is plants like ferns and other things. Those are what I would call truly shade-tolerant plants. And grass just isn't it. But we like to have trees for shade. I don't know about you, but I ain't cutting down the trees in my front yard that shade my house in the summertime, because I already pay way too high an electric bill in the summer, and I don't need that getting any higher. But I know that grass right underneath a tree is not going to do well. And you can't really do much except remove shade. But that, you know, has the other consequences.
The telltale question is always, how many hours does this particular grass need? And from your publications and from things that we have been taught over the years, 4 hours, 6 hours, 8 hours, all day sun, is there a magic number? And I guess it would depend on the type of turf grass that we talk about, where it would fall in that range.
That's right. So the floor, I think the absolute minimum below which you really can't expect any grass to do well is 4 hours of sun. Okay, so for example, St. Augustine grass and some of the newer varieties of zoysia grass, they'll be okay with 4 hours of direct sun a day most of the time, everything else being equal. But if you want Bermuda grass to look good, then you really need at least 6 and preferably 7 or 8 hours of sun a day on it. Centipede grass, which is another commonly used warm season grass in the southeast, can do well with maybe 4 or 5 hours of sun a day. Some of the cool season grasses, the one that we use most in the southeast would be tall fescue, also will be okay with 4 hours of sun a day. But if you get below that, it doesn't matter what species of grass you have, it's going to thin out. And so what I often see, what I often tell people to expect, is that the lawn will probably shrink as the landscape matures. You know, if you're buying a new home in a fresh subdivision, well, you can grow any grass you want there for the first 5 or 10 years after that house is built, because all the trees are small when they go in, all the other landscape plants are small, but they grow. And so it's not uncommon at all to have to convert some areas that used to be grass into some other kind of a ground cover maybe, or into a flower bed, or even just an area with pine straw or, you know, crushed rock or something else to keep the ground from washing away. And that's fine. It doesn't mean that you have failed as a grass grower. It's just recognizing, you know, how those grasses are.
You might have succeeded as a tree grower.
You probably have, yes. That's right.
And that's a lot of calls coming, what's wrong with my grass? And they've had this house for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And hey, look, the trees have gotten bigger. And that's just a natural response that you just have to accept. And then they want to know, well, what can I do about it? And typically does not mean cutting the trees down. My favorite turf grass is pine straw. Because mm-hmm. sometimes that is the best alternative. When you have too much shade, then grass is not going to be the option. Then you do need to turn into a natural area. Going back to what you said a minute ago about the type of light, does morning light versus afternoon direct sunlight matter to these turf grass?
It can. It's funny because when you look at some of the studies that have been done, it's a mixed bag. Sometimes it seems that morning light produces a higher quality of turf. Sometimes it seems that afternoon sunlight does. Okay. I think that, and you have some other confounding factors as well, because areas that have morning light, they tend to face east and south, and areas that have afternoon light tend mostly to face west and southwest, right? And so depending on what the wind patterns are like, prevailing winds where you are, especially in the wintertime, that will affect how the grass does, especially a warm season grass in a cooler area of the southeast where we have to worry about winter kill. In the wintertime, if you're on a north or northwest facing slope, those areas tend to be much more prone to winter kill just from the cold, dry winds that we tend to get out of those directions in the wintertime. However, having said all of that, I think most of the time, it seems like morning sun is slightly preferable to afternoon sun.
Some of that's got to do with heat.
It has to do with heat, and then it also has to do with how long it takes the dew to dry off in the morning time. So areas with morning sun, they tend to dry off sooner, which leads to less fungus problems in the turf. But on the other hand, it can also mean more drought problems in dry weather too. So there is a trade-off there, and I don't think it's a deal breaker either way whether the light comes in the morning or in the afternoon. It just has to have that light.
Dr. Hahn, thinking about the turf grass, the shading on it, if you are measuring the length of time, I tell people, would you put a flag out there in different parts of the yard and keep up with the hours it hits that flag? For instance, when you look out there and say, well, it's 8 hours, 9 hours of sun right there. Well, the left side or the right side, the east side, the west side, the middle of it might have got more hours of sun, but the sides did not. And of course, that's what's thin. And a lot of people don't understand, well, you're lacking in light here, and there's nothing we can do for this particular grass that you have. It's going to be thin in those spots because it was only 3 hours of light, which sounds like a lot if you're standing there in it and it's hot day, but you're in the shade a lot of that day.
That's right. There are some ways that you can put numbers to how much light you have. As a matter of fact, what I like to do is use a light meter. You know, they're designed for use either in a greenhouse or, you know, just out in a yard. And you can put these things in the lawn and just let them sit there for 24 hours. And they'll record how much light fell on them. And then you can push a button and a couple of LEDs will light up and it'll give you a range how much light fell on that location in that past 24 hours. Okay. And so the way that that's measured, it's a unit called the daily light integral. And I don't know if we really want to get into how that's calculated, but the numbers that you're looking for is, you know, a DLI of about 11 to 12 for the most shade tolerant grasses should be okay. But for something that is more like for something like a St. Augustine grass, or again, some of the zoysia grasses, if you're in that 12 to maybe 11 range, you should be okay. For Bermuda grasses, you're going to be wanting a DLI of more like 18 or 20 plus. Those, you know, you can just look them up online, you know, and, you know, just cheap light meters work really well. And that lets you get some numbers that you can, you know, refer to and not just have to eyeball it, right? Of course, the other thing you can do is use one of these sun tracker apps that are available for smartphones and other, you know, devices, where you can stand any place and it'll predict where the sun will be at any given time of day, right? And so you can use that to see, okay, well, when is the sun going to be behind a tree, right? Or behind a building, you know, on any given date of the year. So, and these things, again, they're not too expensive. The sun tracker apps, I use them on my phone a lot because, again, shade is so important when you're looking at turf grasses. And so that, that's a way that you can visualize it. You can say, all right, well, December 21st, right, shortest day of the year, where's the sun going to be versus, you know, June 20th, you know, and any day in between. And so that'll let you stand in a place at the yard and get an idea of whether or not you can really expect to have enough light there.
Well, it's so expensive to establish turf grass. To me, that is a big deal to think about. Before you have these issues, we could know that up front.
That's right. But then also be aware, if it's a tree causing your shade issue, it will increase over time because those trees will keep growing. Sometimes you can trim limbs. I mean, we have to prune trees to keep them healthy. And, you know, there's ways to maybe target that to open up the canopy enough to maintain some stuff growing underneath them. But bottom line is, you know, the shade is only going to get worse over time for most people's home landscapes.
Dr. Hahn, let's start with, since we were talking about shade, let's talk about some of the most shade-tolerant grasses, turf grasses, and where would you start if you had heavier shade, and how we...
Well, like I said before, the species of turf grasses that are the most shade-tolerant, I think, are St. Augustine grass, tall fescue, and certain zoysia grasses. Of those, St. Augustine grass and zoysia grass are both members of the group we call warm season grasses. They'll do very well in hot weather, but they'll go dormant in the wintertime. So as soon as we get a frost, those grasses stop growing, they turn brown, and they go to bed for the winter, or at least until it warms up again. Tall fescue is a cool season grass. So it does not go dormant, won't turn brown in the wintertime, but it does not handle hot weather anywhere near as well as the warm season grasses do. So it depends on where you are in the southeast. You know, if you are in the deep south on the coastal plain, South Georgia, South Alabama, low country, the Carolinas, places like that, Florida. Okay, that's pretty solid warm season grass country. You don't really want to be trying to grow tall fescue in those areas. But if you're up in the mountains, okay, tall fescue is very popular in that part of the southeast. That's because it's cooler up there, right? And it's downright cold in the wintertime, and it's too cold sometimes for the warm season grasses to survive the winter. So there's this belt that runs across the upper south from maybe, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, western North Carolina, North Georgia mountains, higher elevations of Alabama, Tennessee Valley. We call it the transition zone. And a lot of my colleagues who work in turf in that part of the world like to say it's where you can grow all of the grasses, but equally badly. Because in the summertime, if it's an especially hot and droughty summer, you're going to lose the cool season grasses. If it's especially cold winter, you're going to lose some warm season grasses. But if you're farther north than that or farther south than that, you know, if you were in a shady area in the deep south, I would say go for either St. Augustine grass or zoysia grass. And in particular, I'm thinking of the fine-bladed zoysia. So there's two distinct groups of zoysia grass, the ones that have really fine blades and then the ones that have a more of a medium texture. So the Latin name for the medium texture one is zoysia japonica, and there's all different kinds of varieties of those. Most of the fine-textured ones are in the species zoysia matrella. Okay, and those tend to have better shade tolerance. One of the really important things that people who've been bringing out new zoysia grasses in particular have been looking for over the past 20 years or so has been better shade tolerance. So if it's been released since about 2000 or 2010, it's going to have a lot improved shade tolerance over zoysias that came out back in the 20th century.
Moving on to the next one would be centipede. We see that a lot in the South. I personally have grown centipede, and it's done fairly well. It's thinned over the years, definitely thinned in places where more shade. Some people say 4 hours, some say 6 hours, some say it needs 8 hours. I guess clarify a little bit on centipede, because it does has a lot of variability when it comes to the shade and sunlight.
Yeah, I would say centipede falls somewhere in the middle between your St. Augustine and your Bermuda grass. It's similar to the older varieties of zoysia grass. So I'd say 5, maybe 6 hours. 6 hours, you'd probably be okay. 5, you might be okay if it's a very warm location. So centipede is also not very cold tolerant. So you don't see centipede much north of about the Piedmont region of the southeast. Okay, so you get up into the mountains, it's rare to see centipede grass. You see it a lot in South Georgia, South Alabama, the Florida Panhandle. That's kind of the stronghold of centipede grass. And then west into Texas. So, you know, you go into, you know, a place like Houston and even maybe as far north as Dallas, you'll find a little bit of centipede. But it tends to stick fairly close to the coast. Interestingly enough, you go farther south in Florida, you see less centipede. It's almost all St. Augustine grass from about Disney South, Orlando, south in Florida.
Centipede, to me, doesn't have the best fall color or even summer color of compared to the others. And it doesn't require the nitrogen that some of the others do. But it's one of my favorites just because of the, I'll say, slower growth rate as compared to some other things. For instance, Bermuda needs to be mowed pretty often to stay looking good. That's why I like the centipede. To me, it doesn't look as good. I've seen some pretty stands of it. Don't misunderstand. But as far as the green color, if you want that deep green, you probably don't want the centipede. But because of the slower growth rate, I don't have to mow it as often. It's one of my favorites for that reason.
Yeah. Centipede grass is a funny thing because it, out of all of the turf grasses we grow on lawns pretty much worldwide, it probably needs the least amount of fertilizer. It can tolerate some of the least fertile, most acidic, just horrible soils that you wouldn't recommend people try to grow things on. And so that's a big advantage, right? But it also, the flip side of that is that it doesn't actually do very well when you pour fertilizer on it. And it does have naturally kind of a light green color, does not look like most people's mental image of the best, deepest, dark, almost bluish green lawn, right? And so when you put that right up next to like a St. Augustine grass lawn or a zoysia grass lawn, you know, and your centipede in the middle, people are going to be able to tell that it's a different kind of grass if you're managing it properly. Because if you pour fertilizer on it, you can get it to be darker green for a year or two, but then it starts to die. And so this is definitely a case of too much of a good thing turns into a bad thing when you're fertilizing centipede grass. Let it be centipede. You know, take advantage of the fact that it doesn't need very much nitrogen, so you don't have to fertilize it as much as other grasses. It won't grow as fast. It won't be as dark green. So if your priority is to have something to be that color, then yeah, centipede is probably not the grass for you. But if your priority is just to have something that you can keep the ground covered with minimal effort, and it's not too cold in the wintertime, then it's a really good choice, actually.
So the next one on the list is for full sun, that tolerates the most light, does well in full sun, is the Bermuda grass.
That's right. Bermuda grass, and I really should say Bermuda grasses, because like with zoysia, we have two major divisions of Bermuda grass. We have ones you can buy seed for, and sometimes we just call those seeded Bermuda grasses. Sometimes we call them common Bermuda grass. And then we have ones that you can't get any seed for, and you have to buy sod or maybe plugs or sprigs and plant them vegetatively, right? And so oftentimes we'll call those vegetative Bermudas, or sometimes we'll call them hybrid Bermudas, because the majority of those are actually a hybrid between two different Bermuda grass species. And whether you got a hybrid or a common Bermuda grass, seeded or vegetative, they all really require full sun to be their happiest. But if you give them full sun and a lot of fertilizer, they will grow fast. Very fast, to the point where you have to mow them more than once a week in the summertime when it's hot for them to really be healthy and looking good. And that's not easy to keep up with. It sounds easy. I have Bermuda grass in the front yard of my house, and I start off every year as soon as it gets hot. Now, I'm not mowing it twice a week yet this year because we're recording this in early May, and it's not in the 90s every day yet. And, you know, low temperatures are still getting back down into the 50s. But as soon as we get into the 90 degree-ish range for a high every day and upper 60s to low 70s for a low, that stuff's just going to grow super fast. And normally in a typical summer for me, I'll be able to keep up mowing with it twice a week, maybe through about July. August rolls around and the kids start going back to school, and the semester at Auburn starts up, and I usually cannot keep up with mowing it twice a week. And so by that time, I'm just mowing it once a week. And so my lawn never looks as good on September 1 as it does on July 1 or August 1.
Dr. Hahn, you've talked a lot about the shade requirements and things on the selecting this, how they grow. If you were ranking these turf grasses in the amount of maintenance required for each one, what order would that go in?
From the most maintenance required to the least, I would say Bermuda grass requires the most maintenance. I would follow that by St. Augustine grass, then the zoysia grasses, both types of zoysia, and then centipede grass. So that's the warm season grasses ranked by most maintenance, Bermuda grass, down to the least maintenance required, which would be centipede. If you want to throw in the cool season grass tall fescue into that, I think it requires a level of maintenance that would fall kind of in the middle right there, so about akin to zoysia grasses.
And that maintenance, as we define that maintenance, that's mowing, watering, insect control, disease control, just that general things that you have to maintain to keep the yard looking great.
Correct. I mean, when I talk about just overall maintenance requirements for different, you know, types of grasses, I'm talking about everything.
You're also talking about time and money.
Yes, exactly. And it's a trade-off sometimes. Sometimes you want to spend more time. Sometimes you want to spend more money. But just in general, you're going to be spending more of one or the other or both if you have Bermuda grass as opposed to, say, centipede grass for sure.
We get that question a lot of, I want a grass that stays green all the time and looks good, and I want low maintenance.
Again, trade-offs that you have to make. You know, grasses are living organisms, and like any other plant, you can't really expect it to not require any light, not require any water, not require any fertilizer. That's just not the way plants work.
The ones that are the greenest and, to me, that look the greatest require more time and money. So you just have to evaluate that in your mind when you decide which turf grass we want to plant.
The centipede, I chose centipede because it is sort of it's always been called the lazy man's grass. I call it moody because it does have a lot of issues that it's not drought tolerant, does not like cold. It tends to thin out in places where there's not enough light, does not like traffic, doesn't like a lot of fertilization, as you said. But so it has its issues. For the zoysia grass, there's a lot of beautiful varieties of that out there that do well in the shade and do well in the full sun. And people, that creates that carpet look that people like. And that seems to be sort of in the middle. But then you mentioned the Bermuda grass that requires the mowing, requires the fertility, requires the insect control on a regular basis just to keep it going and looking good.
Yeah, that's right.
We may even wear a lawnmower out more often by having the Bermuda because we're using it twice as often as centipede. Just think about the money in your lifetime you're going to spend on lawnmowers and mowing that grass. But I think that's one of the prettiest grasses I look at, but it does require time.
Dr. Hahn, we thank you for being here with us on this episode of Southern Ground. We've dug deep into this particular topic on establishing turf grass, selecting turf grass, and then hitting the highlights of the different characteristics of turf grass for the Deep South. For more information on selecting the right turf grass for your home lawn, be sure to visit our website at the Alabama Cooperative Extension System. That address is www.aces.edu. Or refer to your local county extension office that's associated with a land-grant university in your state. We're going to continue this conversation as we get deeper into more the maintenance and the management of these individual grasses. And so I want you to stay tuned for our next podcast as we'll continue this conversation with Dr. Hahn, with Chip, and myself. Thank you for listening to this episode of Southern Ground.
Southern Ground has been a production of Alabama Extension at Auburn University.